antifaz que tu maldad
cubría. This is Erin Fitzpatrick at The Root of It, the Heritage Radio Network. This is Tuesday, July 7th. Hope everyone enjoyed their 4th of July festivities. This afternoon is a two-part of our conversation with Jonathan Russo from the Organic Wine Journal. He joined us last week and he's here again. There was too much to talk about to fit into 30 minutes, so we've invited him back. And thanks for coming, Jonathan.
Oh, the return trip is always better. It's much cooler. Well said.
Thank you. Thank you also to our sponsor, VS Imports. Donato, you've been great. We're going to start this segment today with a conversation about organic wine and the industry and the ethics of luxury and the luxury of ethics, which is a topic that Jonathan has written about on his website, organicwinejournal.com. Not too long ago, you actually wrote about this. Can you explain a little bit about the premise?
Sure. I've been involved in or aware of like luxury marketing for a long time, because in the advertising industry, most of the things you are advertising are quote luxury items. And a couple of, a year ago or so, I went to a seminar at the Luxury Marketing Council. A friend of mine dragged me down to that, and I heard all about luxury marketing and how to market luxury products and what people want out of luxury products. And I listened, and I paid attention to, you know, speaker after speaker describe, you know, what luxury marketing was all about. And when I left, I was just awestruck by the fact that the word responsibility never entered into any of their discussions. And I was kind of like really just mystified that nobody really wanted to talk about the role of responsibility in luxury marketing. So I thought about this for a couple of weeks, and then I just like burned inside of me, and I went to the computer, and I wrote this article for the Organic Wine Journal about the luxury of ethics and the ethics of luxury. Because in organic wine or biodynamic or natural wines, Erin, there's a luxury in knowing that the wine you're drinking has an ethical component. Mm-hmm. It's luxurious to me, right, to know this. And what does that mean? Well, here's two parallel tracks. Parallel track one, conventional wine. Some gigantic industrial grower is growing grapes in some, you know, probably inappropriate place, using, you know, tremendous amounts of water, pesticides, herbicides, fungicides. And in that process, he's poisoning the earth, the water table. Mm-hmm. He's killing every worm. Have you ever seen some of these vineyards? They're sterile. You know that they actually harvest grapes, some of these places, in hazmat suits? I mean, if you want to just mentally picture that image, right? You're in a French bistro somewhere, you know, and having a Coco Vin and a Beaujolais, and you're feeling, you know, cool and groovy and, you know, happy at yourself, and, you know, there's smoke mirrors, and, you know, you're thinking, maybe I'll have a Galois.
Right. And like, well, you know, just aliens think, are invading, right, our vineyards.
And then when you raise this conventional glass of wine to, you know, get this sense of yourself, but just think about somebody in a hazmat suit,
right,
picking those grapes.
Oof, not,
says
not
it all.
Pretty, right?
It isn't pretty, Erin. Mm-hmm. And so we don't want to, you know. Then the field workers are poisoned. Their children have poisoned. They bring this home to their houses or their in substantial, you know, homes, and the pesticides wear off on the furniture. The kids have toxic levels in their blood. This has all been known. This is tested. I mean, this is settled law. And you're then, you know, involved in a situation that everybody is hurt to make this wine, and you're drinking it, and that is not a luxury to me. It's
right.
Just the opposite.
Yeah.
And what is a luxury to me is knowing that I am going to drink a bottle of wine or a glass of wine, and a farmer has made this. He's grown it without pesticides, herbicides, fungicides. There are birds circles flying around. There are worms crawling underneath. There are insects, you know, hopping amongst the weeds. The workers are, you know, free to pick and eat the grapes if they choose to, because they're delicious and there's nothing toxic on them. Their children are not poisoned, and that's then made into a good wine, brought to market. And when I drink that glass, I feel very luxurious. I feel that I'm doing something to reverse the destruction of our Earth and our planet, and I don't want to harm people in the process. Mm-hmm. And that's not just about wine, obviously. Mm-hmm. This luxury of ethics idea is about everything. It's a food, of course, you know, heritage foods, and it's
yeah,
the same.
Every time I eat the heritage meat, I say, wow, I really am treating myself well. Right. Feel a little bit indulgent in some ways. Might be paying $2-3 more for that dish, but it's the right way to do it. And it's funny that we sometimes think about these things as a luxury or an indulgence, where in other parts of the world, perhaps Europe, for example, it's common day. It's just the way it's done.
Right.
So there is this word. It's a luxury, but it's also in certain aspects just natural.
Well, and what more what category would you rather be luxurious in than food?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're taking it into your body.
Mm-hmm.
It is you. You know, I mean, I would rather be luxurious and pay more for my food than buy a handbag or, you know, a fancy car or you know, Italian silk suit or something. I can't imagine, you know, doing any of those things. But I would rather have that luxury in my blood and in my system, into my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes for wine. So, yes, heritage foods is exactly the same sort of process of the luxury of ethically knowing that a farmer is raising his animals in an ethical manner. And we all know, we've all seen all the hundreds of movies of, you know, what's gone wrong in the commercial slaughterhouses, et cetera. So that's what the concept of the luxury of ethics and the ethics of luxury boiled down to when it comes to organic and biodynamic wine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's it's real, and it's a very powerful thing, especially for wine, which is a luxury item because you don't need wine.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
You don't, it's not like coffee.
right. And that's one aspect. And then the other aspect is that it generally costs more. You're not seeing as many organic or biodynamic wines on that 15 and under or 10 and under shelf.
No.
And you walk into a retail store.
That,
so you're thinking, oh, this is a little bit higher end. Why do I need that? Maybe I'll get two bottles instead of one, you know, good one here. And I think that we Americans have economized a bit on some of these purchases.
Well, I certainly that is the case. There's no possible way that a organic or biodynamic producer could possibly bring you wine at the commodity price that the Trader Joe's $4 or $5 bottles of wine are being sold at. In order to do that, they're sourcing a commodity at the absolute lowest possible price that they can, you know, source a commodity. They're blending, they're field picking, you know, they're harvesting. It's a different
trucking grapes to and fro from several different vineyards.
The commodity gigantics, this combine that brings you very, very inexpensive wine, is a combine that is sacrificing almost every other aspect of the process for the price.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question. That's just the way it is. There's just no question.
Do you have any insight into why the organic food and natural food industry has grown so much, where the organic wine and spirits has tailored just behind, not so steadily?
That bedevils me in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
On a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. You got lines going around Whole Foods, and a lot of that stuff isn't necessarily local or organic either.
As somebody who saw coffee go from Folgers, commodity coffee, where everybody drank Folgers, you know, mountain grown, which is, you know, the most absurd comment you could ever imagine, because all coffee is grown in mountains, basically, to fair trade, shade grown, bird friendly, you know, and people willing, and now this is like, you know, sold at Starbucks and mass produced, and everybody wants fair trade, shade grown, you know, coffee. Why that hasn't taken place on wine yet is a very interesting story. I have several theories. I'm sure that there are some listeners out there that have better ones. But I'll just, if I may,
tell you
my theories.
Yes.
They're just theories. Okay. One is that there's a bit of a don't ask, don't tell thing going on in the organic wine industry and the wine industry in general. And that can best maybe be illustrated by an anecdote that I can tell you about a trip I had about 5 or 6 years ago to Burgundy. I was in the town of Beaune for a night, and I wanted to get some organic wine and learn a little bit about what was going on in organic wine in Beaune. So I went to a wine store. It was open late at night, and I asked the proprietor in, you know, ridiculous English French, English, whatever, you know, to talk to me about what he had in organic wines. And he proceeded to go over to the shelf and he took out this bottle, about seven bottles of wine. None of them were labeled organic wine. Mm-hmm. And I said, what's up with this? You know, how do I know? How do you know? How do I know it's organic? And he, as nicely as he could, explained to me that he knew every family making these wines.
Right.
They had been made, these families had been making these wines for 8, 9, 10 generations. Some of these chateaus had gone back to the 13th or 14th century. And that they had no reason to label their wine other than the family name and the appellation and what it was. That they sold it out. They were making plenty of money. They didn't need any more. And they didn't need to tell you that they were doing it this way. They were doing it this way because they weren't going to poison their own land. They weren't going to poison themselves. They lived there.
Yeah.
So that's the don't tell part.
Sure.
A lot of the great wines that we have are organic. Some of them are biodynamic.
Mm-hmm.
But the vintner and the winemaker, the grower, doesn't need to tell you.
Right. Okay. They don't need to make that proclamation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because of their own pride. And also, this gets into something else you can read about on the Organic Wine Journal. They don't want to get put in the organic ghetto. For some reason, you're quite right. It lines around whole food. Milk is not, there's no organic ghetto for milk. It's in demand. It's getting three times the price.
Mm-hmm.
They can't keep organic milk on the shelves. So that's like lauded, the idea
right.
It's organic milk, but organic wine still has a ghettoization idea mm-hmm. that there's a ghetto of organic winemakers. I don't get it myself. I think it's somehow associated with like some Zap comic image, hippie farmer, you know, beard down
right.
to his navel, driving an old Ford Fairlane pickup truck, you know,
musty, little barnyardy,
exactly.
a little woody.
Exactly.
Yeah, not quite
exactly.
as plush, smooth, soft
right.
as our sweet
exactly.
American taste
like it.
And
for some
it.
Reason, we don't want that. We
yeah.
think our wine should be made by very sophisticated people,
mm-hmm.
and it's in a certain kind of very elevated process.
Sure. Wave the magic wand, and voila.
Don't understand it. So that's the second thing, is that it just... and then it's very possible that early on, some of the diehard organic people that were screaming, organic, made crummy wine.
Right.
It's conceivable that,
sure.
you know, people aren't crazy. They may have had an experience where
it's like whole wheat pasta. When that first came onto the market, I said, I really want to eat this, but this is terrible. And now there's about
right.
50 different varieties on the shelves, and they're great.
Right.
So, well, we'll let our listeners ponder on that subject as well. We're going to take a quick break and be right back. Thank you for joining us at the Heritage Radio Network. This is Aaron Fitzpatrick at The Root of It. And my guest today is Jonathan Russo from the Organic Wine Journal. So we've been talking about the ethics of luxury and the luxury of ethics, and we're going to move into this segment to speak a bit about the cost of making wine from the producer's aspect and why maybe that extra price of the bottle that gets handed over to the consumer exists. I read today somewhere in an article from Agence Presse France that about an average of 18% more goes into farming organically, biodynamically, than conventionally. So that does seem like a reasonable number to you, is what we discussed over the break.
Oh, it sounds, you know, totally reasonable. And I would imagine that biodynamic farming is even more expensive at this moment. You know, the large-scale agribusinesses and have done everything that they can to bring down the price of, you know, pesticides, fertilizers, and herbicides to a very low level so that they encourage their use. And to withdraw from that system is inevitably, you know, like any addiction, painful and costly. And, you have to unhook yourself, and in doing that, yields can go down for a while, and labor costs can go way up for a while, and you can actually lose crops to weather and to pests and to viruses and to molds and mildews. Unfortunately, you really can, and you know, you may have to actually prune away bad grapes that you wouldn't do if you could poison the mold that was growing on them. So, yeah, it's more expensive usually to grow things, and, you know, that's why there's a huge price difference between organic milk and conventional milk.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about it.
So, and also there's proof that the bugs that, or powdery mildew, or things that are being used to protect the vines, they kill the bugs, but it's only more of a short-term kind of solution.
Oh, sure.
In the end of the day, these bugs have become more
super
resistant.
Bugs.
Super
sure.
bugs, yeah.
Of course.
Resistant to these, and then you're coming up with a new pesticide.
Of course.
And you're constantly investing in these other...
patented pesticides.
Right.
And patented seeds. We know that. I hope that Heritage Radio listeners really, you know, understand the slippery downward slope of all of agribusiness and agrochemicals. And, you know, we know who the enemies are.
Mm-hmm.
Who are poisoning us. There's no question. We don't have to name them on air. We know who they are.
Right. Well, from the producer's aspect, from the winemaker's aspect, it goes into their thought that even if they don't necessarily state it on the label, or they're making a point to really drive home the organic biodynamic theme in their winemaking, they're knowing that to preserve their own land,
yes,
for the future of their own land, for the future of their own quality in the wine, and to maintain that, that is the only option.
We hope that that's true, Aaron, and I believe it is. I can tell you that in the last 6 years alone, the number of wineries that have made a move towards going organic,
yeah,
and biodynamic is enormous.
It is.
You know, you speak to a man like Phil Cottori, Tony Cottori's brother. Phil Cottori lives in Sonoma, and he's a grower. And he grows for very wealthy individuals who want to have wine in their lives and grapes in their lives. So they'll buy 20 or 30 acres in, you know, Mendocino or Sonoma, Napa, whatever. And, you know, they'll say, Phil, you know, would you grow grapes for us? You know, we're busy making our millions on, you know, Wall Street, or losing our millions on Wall Street,
right,
whichever, right? But we need you to grow grapes for us. And, you know, he'll say, sure, but you understand I'm only going to grow them organically or biodynamically. I'm not going to touch pesticides and herbicides and
mm-hmm.
fungicides. I'm not going to put it in the water. I'm not going to kill birds and earthworms. And they say, Phil, why would anybody want to do that? This is a rapid conversion process. People are doing this all the time. Benzinger is trying to convert his entire,
yeah,
winery. Sinitsky has been doing this. Quivera, some millionaire, I believe, bought out Quivera a few years ago, when he's just completely going biodynamic right now. He doesn't want to deal with this. I understand, actually, in Northern California, there's a one-upmanship of how green you are.
Yeah,
that you're using the wind, gravity, that you're building your things under your vineyards underground. The bragging rights is what I'm saying,
sure,
is now all about
you're wearing,
right,
clothing.
Right.
You know,
yeah, right.
I
being
looked
green
at Vogue last week. Cameron Diaz was,
oh,
on,
really,
there. She,
oh,
did,
yeah,
a whole spread, and,
right,
everything she was wearing was all,
right,
organic threads.
And, okay.
Yep. She's,
yeah,
driving a Prius. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, that's the luxury of ethics.
Yeah.
Can I go back to that for a second?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I can only tell you the most wonderful story of the luxury of ethics. I have a friend in Los Angeles who was very wealthy, and he used to drive Bentleys. He and his wife had Bentleys, the
mm-hmm.
big Bentleys. I mean, these things were Sherman tanks. You know, last time I saw him in L.A. 4 months ago, he was driving a Prius. This is a true story. The,
yeah,
man sold his Bentley, and,
wow,
he just said, I couldn't do that to the planet. I couldn't do that to the earth. I felt so bad. Luxury now, to me, is essentially what he said, is a Prius. So this is happening everywhere, and,
right,
it is happening in wine. People, growers, farmers, winemakers, you know, want to switch to growing organic and biodynamic and natural wines. There's no question that this is going to go in this way. And there's going to be greenwashing. Mm-hmm. Not all of it's going to be what they say it is. There's going to be somebody growing 10 acres biodynamically and then 50 acres non-biodynamically, and he's going to claim he's biodynamic. There are going to be all sorts of fudges, and there are going to be all sorts of, you know, like products that are all calling themselves natural cheese or natural ham. I'm sure Patrick is, you know.
Yeah, what does that mean?
What does that mean? It means nothing. It means exactly what it means. It means nothing. So it has no legal or ethical definition. But we're seeing a huge movement right now. I think the category was growing 20% a year versus 3% for the conventional wine category. A bet from a low base, but you know, do the math, and maybe in 20 years, you know, it'll all be. And people are now
touting
it.
Two of my favorite producers from France, one at Pontet Canet in Bordeaux, the other Didier Daguenot, who sadly passed away last year up in Loire. Before I even knew that they were biodynamic, I was just turned on to their wines. And there's something about the quality you can, it's innate. You know, it's a sensory kind of appreciation that you can get. And I think that people in parts of the world where climates are so ideal, i.e. California, Chile,
South of France. Yeah.
They do have a little bit of a one-up, if you will, on other parts of the world because they're working with such.
It's easier to grow a biodynamic wine in Languedoc-Roussillon than it is on the North Fork of Long Island.
Right, exactly. We will champion all of the vintners in Long Island who are doing that, though. And I'm sure that there'll be ways that they can figure out how to continue to farm organically.
They are, and they're trying, and it's part of a process.
Yeah. I mean, actually, the store New York Vintage, they had quite a few organic producers
they
there.
Do.
Yeah,
they do.
Shin is really out there,
trying to get out there, and Oldfield is pretty much out there, and you know, Macari too they're all working in that direction. I don't think anybody's certified yet. I don't even know if they totally want to be, but their heart and most of their practices are quite in the right place, in the right direction versus 10 years ago or something.
And then with regards to certification, I know that I've spoken with some winemakers or wineries who've said that they've not gone in that direction because they don't want to go through all the bureaucracy. You have to go through all these applications. And I know in Italy especially, I don't think it's quite easy to do, or at least it's very a lengthy process and expensive as well. Is there any sort of differentiation with respect to biodynamics, and if you want to practice that and you want to be realized as such, but you don't want to be going through all of that process? Is it?
Well, this is a great question. I think we touched a little bit on it earlier. Biodynamic is very different. That really is, you either are or you aren't, according to Demeter. But we're willing to listen to any farmer, you know, an organic wine journal, for instance, just tell us that, you know, in an affidavit, if you will, that he's done this without pesticides, herbicides, fungicides. If he swears that he's done it and he puts it in, you know, an affidavit and sends it to us, and we're going to believe him. We're not, you know, we're not going to send inspectors out to the field. So I think it would behoove the grower and the vintner and the shipper and the distributor in the wine business to tell us on the label what the processes are year by year for that particular wine.
Right.
What you used, how you did it, if you did it organically, if you did
it
biodynamic.
If you're using wild yeast, what yeast are you using?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Biodynamic-like or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I agree.
Just tell us on the label what you're up to for that bottle of wine. So I know I don't need to see the certification, or I don't need to see certain things. I just need to know what you tell me the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. We're going to take a quick break and I'll be right back. This is LCD Sound System with Tribulations. Welcome back to At the Root of It. This is Aaron Fitzpatrick here today with Jonathan Russo from the Organic Wine Journal. We have one more segment before we are going to wrap up today's show. And to bring it full circle from Jonathan's introduction to how he came into this whole movement back into the 70s as a Woodstocker, you can call it that.
Okay.
Just want to talk a little bit about where the movement is now, who's really spearheading it. I've seen a huge growth with respect to younger 20 yep. year olds or so who've really taken it upon them. I guess it's like you said, looking out in LA and the change to cars and things like that, you want to be more of a part of it. And so many celebrities have taken a stance on it as well.
Yes.
Leo DiCaprio, and maybe that youth, whatever it took, kind of became more tapped into this movement in their lifetime because of these stars, but maybe not. What is your take on it?
Well, I'm a 19-year-old trapped in a 57-year-old body.
Well done.
So it's a problem for me because I've always lived downtown Manhattan, and you know, I've been downtown Manhattan for 35 years. Downtown Manhattan is still very young and very trendy, and I'm just loving what I'm seeing in the organic, biodynamic wine bar movement here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just in heaven. I mean, I just see, you know, a lot of terroir is here. They're really concentrating on terroir, obviously, and organic and biodynamic. They label everything. Counter does a phenomenal job. I mean, they've got hundreds of organic wines. I defy anybody to go into Counter and not drink, you know, find themselves, you know, 150 organic wines that they love.
Mm-hmm. It's 10, a little joint in the East Village.
Right. 10 Bells. It makes me so happy to go into 10 Bells and to see, you know, what they're doing in the artisanal organic wine movement, mm-hmm. and, you know, charcuterie and the right foods and, you know, artisanal cheeses. I mean, it's just fantastic. And everybody in there is, you know, 23, 24, 25, whatever.
Yeah.
And they're just, you know, these kids are enjoying themselves in a very European way.
Mm-hmm.
This is not Ruby Tuesdays.
Right.
You know, this isn't a sports bar.
Yep, yep.
These people are having fun eating the right foods, the right cheeses, salads, salumi, you know, heritage salumis.
Right.
Organic.
They're well-traveled. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Even if they're not, it's a trip to, you know, yeah. It's a trip around the world just looking at the menu at Terroirs.
Right.
I was in London. I was in London and I went to a wine bar called Terroirs, and, you know, I got to know the chef there, and Ed Wilson, and it's completely organic and biodynamic, and he's even bringing in wines from the continent that you can't really buy in stores. You know,
yeah.
He's making direct to shipper, you know, producer deals for the wine bar, and all the food is organic.
Wow, that's
that he's
great.
Trying to. I mean, this bar, this called Terroirs with an S,
right,
was fantastic in London, and there's just this is growing.
Yeah.
There will be a time that Ruby Tuesdays has an organic wine bar, or TGIF Fridays has organic wine bar night. It's going to happen. You know, like
London's
Walmart.
London's definitely been on.
Well, the continent and their has loved claret, you know, since, you know, 1721 mm-hmm. or whatever. Mm-hmm. So yeah, London has been a wine center, you know, before America was even founded.
Yeah,
but in all seriousness, the downtown, there is a tremendous amount of enthusiasm among very young people not to drink conventional wines and not to buy the stuff that they may have drunk in college.
Right. Right.
Which is, you know, we don't have to name them, but we know what they are. You know, the inexpensive, brand-driven, you know, commodity wines mm-hmm. that they drank in college. Now they're a little older. They're living in Williamsburg. There's a store called, I think, Blue Angel in Williamsburg. Do you know that store?
Don't know it.
It's in East Williamsburg.
Okay.
Okay? And it's all organic and biodynamic. And
cool.
It's a wonderful store in East Williamsburg. I asked her, and she said, you know, these kids are now 27, 28. They're working. They have a little bit of money. And they want real wine now.
Right.
They don't want to drink what they drank, you know, chug-a-lug in college. So I think this young generation, which makes me so happy to see, is clearly on the path of a more sustainable, aware path. Not everybody, but enough.
Right. And I think it goes hand in hand, too, with respect to what's going on in the kitchens and some of these wine bars and these restaurants,
exactly.
because these chefs are doing a lot of things homespun.
Exactly.
There's a pride in taking
absolutely
your own meats and curing them and smoking them and making your own sausages and pâtés and, you know, making your own bitters on the cocktail front. All those things I think people are really standing behind as goes hand in hand with the wine.
Well, people want to have experiences now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have the same hamburger, cheeseburger, and commodity product off of a truck from an agro, you know, industrial supplier, you're not going to have an experience.
Right.
You're just not. That night out is not going to be an experience. You may have an experience watching a sports show or talking to somebody, but you're not going to have a culinary experience. People want to have an experience now. And in this recession, I think people are even more focused on the basics, the here's and now's. They're trying to make mm-hmm. a night out a special night out. Mm-hmm. If they're not going to go somewhere that they can't afford to go now, if they're not going to be able to jet down to Miami for 4 days,
right.
You know,
give me the real.
Yeah.
Give me the,
you know,
yeah. Yeah.
And they're just going to go out for a night, you know, close to home, you know, or whatever. They're not going to go to some other place and spend a lot of money. Let's do what we are going to do. Let's do it right.
Right. Exactly. Very good point. Well, I think that wraps up our show today.
Wow.
I know, it's quick. It's such a pleasure having you here, and you have a wealth of knowledge to share, so
well,
really appreciate
that. Thank you for your leading and pertinent questions.
Well, thank you.
They were both of those, and they certainly were able to you know, elicit the responses that I hoped you wanted to hear.
Well, cheers. Thank you.
Bye.
So for our listeners, it's www.organicwinejournal.com, and you can listen to today's show as well as last week's show on www.heritageradionetwork.com. So thanks again to our sponsor, Vias Imports of Italian Fine Wine. And to our producers and engineer this afternoon, Lorenzo Regioneri and Jack Inslee. We'll see you again next week.